Howdy, thanks for tuning in to episode 6 of the Main Line of Beyond with Mark Singer. Tonight's guests are Rob Perna Jr. and Nikki DiGiorgio of the dynamic duo Onyx and Honey. As usual, we get into deep conversations about music and life. Really hope you enjoy the show. Welcome everybody to episode 6 of the Main Line of Beyond with Mark Singer. We're here every Monday night, excited to put this show together out of the Daydream Creative Studios here in Ardmore, 35 East Lancaster Avenue, a couple doors down from the Ardmore Music Hall. We have a great show tonight. Longtime friend of mine, Mr. Rob Perna Jr., who I first met as the leader of the New Kings of Rhythm, and Nikki DiGiorgio, the new project, Onyx and Honey. And we'll be getting around to them in just a few. Trying to think, just always like to start off the show a bit with some current events, and I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on this, but bummer for the Eagles last night, man. Come on. Watch the show, watch the game rather. Jeez. And that was a bummer, you know? Probably the best Eagles team I've seen all around, and we will be back, everybody. I feel confident about that. So, aside from that, you know, musical dealings, Steal Your Peach has a, next show is still not until March 17th at the Ardmore Music Hall. So we're really, really doing a couple shows a month. We had the Brooklyn Bowl, which was phenomenal, February the 3rd down there in Fishtown, had about 500 people out there. And one of the more fun shows I think we've played. Just a great room, the way it's set up, the disco ball, everyone having fun, bowling, eating. It's a great venue. If you haven't been there yet, I highly recommend it. Just making sure. Okay, good. We're going to be back there soon, too. So we're already working on a new date for there. And Ardmore on the 17th, again, is St. Paddy's Day. Second year in a row that we'll be there on St. Paddy's, but this is just happens at St. Paddy's on a Friday as well, so we're expecting that to be a really nice crowd. And then being blessed with the presence of Mr. Ron Holloway on sax as our guest, as we pay tribute to the 50th anniversary of the Watkins Glen Summer Jam, which took place in 1973, of course, at the Watkins Glen Speedway, featuring the band, the Grateful Dead, and the Allman Brothers. Larger crowd than Woodstock, and that'll be a whole lot of fun doing that one. So that is pretty much it for musical stuff going on with my band Steal Your Peach. I see things lining up. I know you know, there's always some good stuff going on around here at Ardmore Music Hall, we've got to. I know we're going to talk to Rob and Nikki about their music festival going on out with Chester County, which is pretty cool. This summer, we're on a festival at the end of April called the Up in Smoke Festival, which I believe is sponsored by Normal, or it's, you know, it's a legal cannabis backed festival in Towson, Delaware, with some nice bands on that lineup. That should be a lot of fun too. Aside from that, you know, things are floating along in my world. you know, in terms of what I also do here and how the show is supported by my business, ilovemarksinger.com, is another thing that I do aside from being a musician is I'm a realtor. Love to have the honor of working with anyone out there that might be listening. If you want to be a first-time home buyer, I consider it an honor and privilege to help make that happen for you. Something I take seriously and have a passion for, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a pretty important thing to do. Right now, a lot of people that are considering selling their home, they may have a lot of questions. It's kind of time to get things ready for the spring and make sure that, you know, there's some hoops that you have to jump through and make sure that everything's on the up and up. So when you do list your home to be sold, that it's, you know, in a situation where you can get as much as you can for it, basically. So, I'm gonna I'm going to get Rob and Nikki up. I'm trying to think. I think the first time I met Rob was way back. We'll talk about all that. So, yeah, without any further ado, I'm going to get Rob Perna Jr. and Nikki DiGiorgio on.
What's happening?
Not much, man. Good to see you.
You too.
Yeah.
Hello.
All right.
Good to be seen.
Yes, sir.
Did a little radio show with you guys recently.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Soundstage.
Westchester. Now, we played in Westchester, but I don't think we met there initially.
No, I don't think so. I think, one of the first times I remember hanging out with you was at some sort of blues festival. Maybe not a festival. Maybe before they had the Paoli Blues Festival. Uh-huh. They were doing more of like a street thing.
Uh-huh. With Russ Lambert?
With Russ Lambert.
Yeah.
That's one of the first times I've hung out with you.
Yeah. I do think that's right.
Yeah.
It was early on. I kind of feel like maybe we crossed paths at the Rusty Nail.
Yeah, that, for sure. That was going on. And those were, do you remember what night of the week that was? I can't.
Wednesday or Thursday.
They were nice. Yeah. That was a good formidable grooming space for a lot of future blues players in the area, I feel like.
Yeah.
It was a good grindstone to be in there.
Yeah, the house band with Don Evans and Kenny Brooks on drums, Greg Taylor on bass. Mm-hmm. So they were good.
Solid. Some cats.
Yeah, yeah. Which is funny, you know, because, I mean, we're, you know, meeting players at jams like that, obviously you may not be... have the same influences, but you're coming from a similar place.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And for you, you know, because I love the blues, but you know, do too, obviously.
Yeah.
But you have this funky side to you.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's always kind of shown in your playing.
Right on.
Yeah.
That was strongly fostered and encouraged during my time playing with Big Jack Johnson, actually.
Okay.
You know, prior to that, I had spent, like, I would say almost like a 4 to 5 year period where like blues pretty much overtook everything about what I was interested in and what I presented to the public musically. And then I just started to slowly get these funky influences coming in, and playing with Big Jack was no small part of that, because he would close his shows very often. Like a very common one that I remember doing with him was like a crazy slide guitar version of Sex Machine by James Brown.
Whoa.
And we'd be doing like an entire night of just straight blues where like my only role once he hit the stage was and following whatever his head decided, because he didn't follow just a 12 bar pattern.
Right, got that.
You know, it was typically 1-4-5 blues.
Right.
But it wasn't typical at all in the length of time each chord was allotted.
So was it body language?
You had to be on your toes, right. Or you had to be like listening to his voice.
Right.
A lot of times it was based on where he felt like singing the next part. We all just had to be able to kind of follow that.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I always heard about him, and he was kind of, did he play mandolin too?
He did. He also, if I'm not mistaken, I think his earliest years he was an upright bass player.
Mm-hmm.
Before he started the Jelly Roll Kings thing.
Oh.
And he, in fact, I think played with Elvis Presley on a few occasions on upright bass.
Oh, wow.
In the early days.
Okay.
It was wild. Big Jack, so I came to know him very well while I was playing with him as a sideman. And then, like, at some point he came out and saw the New Kings of Rhythm, because, like, I had that going on the whole time. And I was taking everything I was learning from Big Jack and anybody else and kind of filtering it into what my aesthetic was with the New Kings and how I led the band and everything I've learned about presenting a show. And, you know, at one point Big Jack came out to see the New Kings, and it was at the old, it was 15 North, actually, in Westchester.
Okay.
And we were up there and called him up to sit in, and he wanted to play bass. Which at that point, I had never heard him play bass.
Okay.
I'd only heard him play guitar. And I've played behind him on guitar several times.
So you're like, huh?
And he'd come up and play bass with us and like killed it. It was like the funkiest, like we did like a slow blues, but it was like the funkiest bass playing. Like you would never expect him to play bass the way he did. It was wild.
Okay.
It was super cool, but totally not how you would approach normally to play like a 12 bar blues on the bass.
So what was his tie to the area? He came from the South, didn't he?
Yes, Clarksdale, Mississippi. But the the guy that brought most of the heavy cast to the area to play blues was Chet Woodward. He was a drummer in Westchester. He was from Jersey originally, but then he traveled around quite a bit playing with, I think he was in Moby Grape for a minute at some point, and played with everybody, and then was backing up all these blues guys, and then eventually settled in Westchester and was filtering all these guys who would be touring, and that's how they would come down through the Westchester, Philly, around here also, seeing playing blues. Okay. A lot of that was Chet Woodward.
Okay, Lonnie Shields is another guy.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Kind of tied in. Yeah. Okay.
There was a couple other guys that promoted heavy back then. A guy named Hooter, Maury Sasloff. He was bringing a lot of. I think he's the guy that brought John Brim into the area.
Uh huh.
A couple of them dudes were really pumping it up.
So I mean, you know, was showmanship something that drew you in when you were kind of first getting into music?
Absolutely. Like, I was immediately drawn, like, I already was a huge fan of, like, people like Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, the showmanship qualities of playing guitar, and there's something interesting to note about that I'll mention, too. But, like, you know, then as I'm getting into blues, and I'm seeing guys like T-Bone Walker and, like, Guitar Slim and Buddy Guy, you know, throwing it on real thick as you're presenting your art, you know, like, something not everybody realizes a lot is, like, the visual aspect of what you're doing when you're on stage is sometimes more important because, like, not everybody hears music at all the way we do, and not everybody even cares about music, especially when you're at, like, bars and stuff like that. You're not really, most of the time, it's not people that came specifically to see music. They're just at the bar that happens to have bands playing.
Right.
And when you're in those situations, people don't necessarily remember, especially when everybody's out drinking. Especially the crazier nights, man. Like, you leave there at the end of the night, it's like half the people are probably blacked out the next day. They're going to sometimes remember the visual aspect way above what they actually heard being happening on stage at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Only, like, certain, some of the things that we really like about what we play as musicians that we're striving for, like, musically,
mm-hmm.
don't even get noticed by people that don't play music. You know, it's like we listen to music in a different way, especially, I think, guitar players sometimes. But, like, so you're seeing that body language of guitar being brought out and in the forefront, and that's the kind of thing that really drew me in, I think. It was, like, took me a long time to realize that when you're watching Jimi Hendrix play and he's all over the place and his whole body's moving, it's not just a wild dance. It is very much part of what you're hearing. The manipulation of where that instrument is in relation to your body, the way your arm
right.
and your hands and your attack changes
mm-hmm.
once you start to, like, explore, like, playing in that, like, way or at that volume, it all becomes a part of the instrument itself,
mm-hmm.
I feel.
Yeah, I can see what you mean, especially with someone that moved around as much as he did.
But that was definitely a blues aesthetic, too, so I really appreciated that. And also the whole... You know, I saw guys getting in a costume, basically, before they would go on stage a lot of times in the blues scene. You know, you guys show up and they got their nice blues uniform in the gig, in the bag over here.
Right.
And they go in and, you know, like, so I'm like...
You start going to school like that.
Yeah,
right?
The respect,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I know that it's like a respect thing. Right. It's like you're basically going to church when you're going to play the blues.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
But to me, it also was like I'm going to be living that. If I'm going to the gig like that, and I'm going to be playing 4 or 5 nights a week anyway, like, I'm just going to start living that life. So, like, I just started dressing that way all the time. And also for me, it was important because I didn't have a lot of, I didn't feel like I had a lot of a voice as a teenager until music was a part of my life. And so to also visually put that out there so that I, no matter where I went, everybody knew that my life was about the music and about the art, and, like, I just wanted that to be, like, evident when I walk into a room, even without a guitar. I wanted people to kind of know and give respect to the art that way, too, like, in my daily life.
Okay. That see you as an artist.
Yeah.
See you as somebody that, you know, that's a part, an extension of who you are.
Yeah. And to also maybe help people sometimes realize, like, you, all it does take is, like, you make a choice if you put yourself out there. You don't have to, like, worry about the judgment behind what you're going to look like. Just an expression thing, too. Like, I just would like everybody to feel more comfortable expressing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to set an example that way through my music as well.
Yeah, no, it is an expression. I mean, truth be told, a lot of my favorite music wasn't around this, you know, the showmanship so much. It's like, you know, Coltrane, for instance, was just, right, like, yeah, he wasn't really doing much. But I respect and appreciate it. And I'm sure James Brown is a good one for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, you know, and that's part of what made the funk thing also rolling. You know, if I'm already living that kind of life, a loud life, per se, and then I get attracted to something like James Brown and Parliament Funkadelic, that opens the floodgate. And it wasn't like I was talking about Big Jack. He's the one who told me, literally, because I was struggling. I had, like, some of the blues men in my life, kind of like, oh, kid, why don't you just, all you should do is play the blues. You know, don't worry about this other stuff. Just play the blues, play the blues. I'm like, yeah, man, I feel this music, you know? And Big Jack was like, I was talking to him one-on-one about it one time. And he's like in his curlers between sets, you know? He was like, you rock your curlers. He had big old process hair still. And, you know, he's like, kid, you got to play what you feel. And everybody else can just get in line or not. You know, he's just telling it like it is. Like, but like, I'm like 16 hearing this, you know what I mean? And it was like big. It just, it really did open the gates for me to just kind of do my own thing and just never look back.
Right. Yeah, you've run into a lot of blues purists too that'll tell you it's got to be played like this.
Right.
You know, I did.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's a real thing. So it makes the scene sometimes unattractive.
Right.
You know, any purists can do that to any given musical style at any point. You know, it sucks the fun out. None of the music that we all love and have been listening to would have made it to our ears if people didn't shift and change and strive and compete with each other within that realm to find new sounds and new layers.
Right, yeah, no, for sure, 100%. So was guitar the first instrument for you, Rob?
Yes, guitar was definitely the first instrument. In third grade, I decided I wanted to play guitar. And my parents wholeheartedly full sent it. They bought me an electric guitar and a little amp and got me lessons. And I went and started taking lessons. And I think like within like 3 to 6 months, felt like forever, but it was not really that long. I started to hate the guitar.
Oh.
My first teacher was just not fostering any kind of like connection or even trying. Now, when I look back at it, it's really a shame because it really was his responsibility, not mine, as a third grader. You know, it's his responsibility to find a way to connect with me and make me want to have fun playing the guitar. And it didn't seem like he was interested in doing that at all.
Okay.
Like, when I was like, you know, I came in the door already liking music and like, it being into a mix between what my parents listened to, like Steely Dan, Talking Heads, also Jimi Hendrix, David Bowie. Then I'm also really into like the Dead Kennedys and Suicidal Tendencies and like stuff like that, early punk. Red Hot Chili Peppers, always a major fan. And a lot of rap. But you know, I come in the door with that kind of influence and he starts immediately trying to teach me, like, within a month period of taking lessons, the solo from Sweet Child of Mine. And I'm like, bro, like, I don't even, like, I'm sitting there, like, staring at this guy, like, what about me screams hair metal? This is not something I'm going to connect with. I don't even understand why he didn't just take it to the absolute basics and do, like, he just seemed like he wanted to show off. It was weird.
Right.
It turned me off to the whole thing, and I was like wanting to quit, but I was embarrassed. I thought like my parents would be mad at me, like I wasted their time, so I like didn't say anything, but I used to put the guitar so far out of tune that it would take like half the lesson to tune the guitar. And eventually, like, I'm like, Dad, I just don't want to do it. And he's like, dude, you should have just told us that when it's fine. You don't have to play. Nobody's, you know, it's
right.
Whatever.
Right.
And no big deal. So I put it in the closet, and then 7th grade, so you know, 4 years down the line, me and a group of friends were talking about starting a band, and I was like, well, I have a guitar in my closet, so I guess I'll play guitar. And I went home and I pulled it out of the closet and started to play it, and I remember very specifically at that moment realizing right then and there that I was going to be doing that forever. Okay. And it was not something that I had very much fun with in the initial foray. But as soon as I picked it up, I guess maybe whatever little bit I had retained so that it wasn't hard, like it wasn't a struggle to make noise with it, you know what I mean? Like the fingers worked. I knew the general principle of playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And just that was enough to when I put my hand on that fretboard and strum them strings a couple times, just like knew then that I'd be doing it forever.
Hmm.
And then started a band pretty much immediately.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think that was the most important part of my personal development was the fact that from the rip, it's been with the goal of being in a band, arranging music, and developing a show. I mean, that's been from day one something I was into.
Mm-hmm.
Playing solo didn't come to me until way later.
Right, yeah, I always knew you as, you know, New Kings of Rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, did you have bands before that?
I had a band called Teddy Bear Picnic right before that for like a year before.
Grateful Dead trip.
That band, like nobody sang in that band. And like, it was like really like a weirdly like super energetic, like Chili Peppers type instrumental funk band.
Okay.
And like, then I started to want to sing. And then, like, that band kind of fell apart. And then I started the New Kings of Rhythm to beat that band in the Battle of the Bands. And we did.
Oh.
And the rest is history with the New Kings, you know.
Okay.
It was like a battle band from the rip. Like, starting that up.
Nice. And the other band that I know you did play with a bit that I think is killer is Rocket 88, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mark Keneally, another, like, amazing influence and mentor in the blues and showmanship, and just like that man tells the best stories, and just every crowd that I've ever seen him perform in front of, they're like, they wholeheartedly jump on board the wave, you know.
Yeah, I saw him at the Queen, when you weren't with him that time,
right?
But that was
he's a good guy, man.
Yeah,
he's definitely, he brought every single musician that I've ever met through him. We're playing with him is also like top notch. He just always has the best guys making music with him.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
He's been around a long time.
Yes, sir.
I know that. So part of what I'm trying to do in every one of these conversations is kind of touch a little bit on how music has helped you through hard times, through life, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, it's been a super... It's interesting because I knew we had talked about that a little bit before, and I think that all of us at this table have that in common, that the music has been a major like healing process, part of the healing process throughout life and everything that it throws at you. And it made me think about, like, I've seen a few people over the years like very publicly tell everybody via social media or whatever, like, I'm quitting music, my life is trash, everything's going wrong, blah, 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 I'm quitting music. And I'm like, what? Like, that's the last thing you should be dropping from the itinerary. Like, the way I feel about the value of music as a therapeutic.
Mental health thing. Yeah.
I'm like, cut that out, then you might as well just put me in the well head first at that point anyway.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, the music thing is like that thing that, like, to me, like, every day I wake up and, like, you know, I know not every day is going to be a valuable, like, I'm going to make music that day.
Uh-huh.
But, like, I'm thinking about making music pretty much 24/7. Everything that happens, there's a soundtrack, first of all, going on.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine muting that and then expecting everything to get better.
Uh-huh.
I feel like it would do the exact opposite. So it's always, I think... when I see that, my advice is always like, no, don't drop out. Like, try everything else on that list.
Right.
First.
I get it, man. You know, I mean, I've worked some jobs in the last, you know, couple of years where you run into people and they'll be like, you're in a band? And it's like, you know, I mean, not to say that that's some sort of big deal, but like, I don't know how people get through the regular day-to-day grind without some kind of outlet. A lot of people don't. They really don't have much of an outlet. They just, you know, they do what they do and... find an outlet, people, you know, it's good for you, right?
Right. And look, the band thing in particular is like another form of family. And guess what? it's a family that you pretty much get to choose. Like, we don't get to do that with everything else. The band members certainly become your family if everything's running the way that it should as a band. And in those instances, that's the family you chose, you know, and that's like a beautiful thing that not everybody gets also.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's never been a time I know that you thought about putting it down. And Nikki, I wanted to bring you into the conversation. Thank you for coming out tonight.
Talk about the old days all day. But
no, I know.
The new days are dawning.
I'm here to support Rob in whatever he does. But since we're on that subject, I mean, obviously music had been huge in my life. Before I met Rob, I'd been writing poetry or rhythms or lyrics since I could write. And I didn't have the band experience to start out because for some reason they didn't, like, it wasn't cool to have, like, girls in a band when I was starting to play. So I just, like, immediately, like, took the singer-songwriter route, which was fine because I write fire songs. It wasn't that big of a deal. But I say that to say, there was times that I wanted to give up just because, you know, not being immediately received or being in spaces like where I grew up. I feel like if I grew up like in a more city area, I would have been like way more received with my music, but it was more of like, it was Chester County. So it was just like, it was weird. But after meeting Rob and being in a band dynamic, and I was like, when I first met him, it was in Westchester, and he kept telling me to come out to an open mic. And I was like, I knew, like he was saying, that was the thing that I needed more in my life at that time. My life was pretty great, all things considered, when I had met him, but I was not playing music. And it definitely, you're like denying a part of your soul when that's happening. And I was like, no, I can't do it. And having someone who's fostering a safe environment for you to express yourself made the difference, because I mean, I used to get like sick before I went on stage, like, and now I'm just like totally comfortable being up there. But it has been, and I can't imagine, I mean, our project literally started, you want to talk about a healing modality, it was in COVID that we started. But not even that, my best friend had died a week before COVID, and we were both grieving that, and then COVID hit, and it was literally, we like watched a Beatles documentary, I was crying, and I was like, wow, she would have loved it. And I was just like so inspired after watching the Rooftop documentary, and we immediately started writing music. I told him what I wanted to write, and he was like, all right. We like sat in different corners of the room, and the process was just so easy. So finding also someone who can bring out that side of you has been incredibly healing. Like, I just wasn't doing that, and now I can't stop creating. So it's like a nice domino effect.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That's deep. I mean, and Onyx and Honey, I mean, I know that logo, I see it on you. So is this something that had been in the making, or
that was the music started before the band idea started?
We
started writing and recording together, which, like, also as a healing process, as she was saying, that writing was very much that, I think, for both of us. Also, at that moment in time, like, seeing what was happening and being on the shutdowns, and you didn't really know what was going to happen, was like, we were kind of mourning normalcy for some degree, at least. Like, every gig was gone at that point.
But we also saw that the playing field was essentially leveled, because everybody was live streaming. Flea was live streaming from his backyard, from his iPhone, and so were we.
Yeah.
In our backyard.
Yeah. If you didn't see that was crazy. Like, yeah, you see, everybody was doing stuff like that then.
Yeah.
But I saw one of Flea, and you could tell he was plugged into whatever so he could hear it. Uh-huh. And it was just him. It wasn't plugged in. He was plugged into whatever his source was that he was listening to.
Right.
And jamming along with it. And it was like you could hear just the sound of the electric bass, but like off the neck of the bass, which sometimes sounds real cool anyway.
Right.
And he was playing the lead part to Sidetrack by Freddie King.
Huh.
And he was just jamming along to Sidetrack by Freddie King. And I'm like, what an obscure, weird, like, pick.
Yeah, you know? For Flea. Yeah, like, totally.
And he was doing, like, the Freddie King guitar part, but on bass. And I was like, wow, you know? And I was like, I don't even know how many people that, like, follow Flea even, like, know that that's what he's playing or whatever. You know, it was cool. But, yeah, like, everybody was doing the same thing. That was all you could do.
It was
no cool. matter who you were.
And it was, like, everybody had to pivot, whether... And kind of like what you were saying when people are like, wait, you get to be in a band? Like, it was very... I was probably doing 400 things before the shutdown, but I don't know what you were, or you were at Creep. Yeah. We were both, and it was just so apparent after we, got to just chill for a month when everything was shut down and you physically couldn't go out. But then, like, once my body caught up and I'm, like, having fun just waking up and painting and then going over and picking up my guitar and, like, doing things that actually feed my soul, and it became very apparent that I was, like, this grind that I thought was, like, so essential to my life because I like cash in hand, like, just like it was
killing
a
blessing
me.
That it was kind of giving you a break,
right. And I was just like, all right, and that's to answer your question, like, and that's kind of when we shifted. I mean, I can't speak for Rob, but from what I gather, like, you have been pursuing music to the extent that you want and forever, all the time, but and I had never done it to that extent, but I think both of us had never said, like, after we wrote the first song, I think You Get Me was the first song, and we saw it and we heard it and we felt that, we were like, let's full send this. And I've never really got to do any, and it's been a crazy journey.
Yeah.
How it kind of organically happened, but I think it's cool that it happened that way.
The first tune's called You Get Me?
Yeah. The first one we wrote together.
Wow.
Was like a tribute to her friend Claire.
Okay, I got it.
About the relationship,
yeah,
too, I would say. But yeah, that was the first song that we, like, really, truly, like, we had started playing together a little bit, but that was the first song that we collaborated on writing-wise.
And he had woke up that day saying he wanted to write a tune in E minor, so
But very specifically, I wanted it to be an E minor so that it could, like, have that bottom E, like, that low point, but not be the tone center. So, like, it's, like, it draws the ear. It starts off in an E minor, but then, like, G is really the pivot, like, the tone center, so that it is, like, a brighter sounding song, but it's all written from the aspect of E minor. But, yeah, I mean, for me, writing music prior to Nikki, like, was never, I never really did that as a collaborative thing. I had written music, but never with somebody.
Okay.
And this is the first time. Like, only ever times I've done that was, like, while I was locked up writing songs with people that I was teaching, and almost more as, like, a tool to write, to teach how to write, to, like, arrange and whatnot. But she's the first person that I ever felt comfortable, I think, actually writing a song with. And it's been very nice.
Thanks.
Mm.
That's so nice.
Mm. Well, she, like, you know, the other night she did a show of all, or, like, mostly original music, acoustic, solo, and, like, my mind was blown, like, seeing the type of stuff that she's been writing since she was, like, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, me, I spent a lot of years just mimicking blues or whatever, you know, and, like, just doing whatever. It wasn't until I had, like, the real blues and had to go to prison where I started to really write music. I mean,
mm-hmm,
I had songs written before that.
Mm-hmm.
How many songs did you write, Angela?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so the scope of things there was from the age of, like, 15 to the age of 34,
mm-hmm,
I had probably written 40 songs, and I was pretty proud of all of them, you know, I thought they were all pretty dope, but then I went to jail, and I wrote, like, 400 songs in, like, 4 years,
mm,
and that was, like, crazy to watch, like, the quality of writing, the depth of lyrics, or however my brain started to work, where, like, I didn't care anymore, I started to be, like, I don't give a fuck if anybody, like, what I talk about in the song. Like, most people, if it reaches a grander audience than just my immediate people, they're not going to know whether it's a true narrative or a story being told or anything anyway. So right. I started to write more from a very honest way where it was like, maybe sometimes you don't, or maybe sometimes you veil things too much in a song. That might be a problem some people have. Like, you're trying too hard to make it vague so that people aren't judging you based on what's being told in the song. Like, so I started to just be more honest personally, I think, with the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
which opened the floodgate, honestly, for me lyrically. But again, then it wasn't really, I think, after getting out, probably only wrote a couple songs in a couple years, and then when being put on lockdown and started writing with her,
mm-hmm.
then more. You know, like, so I kind of need to be in some form of where I can't just be doing whatever I want.
Right, forced into a corner.
For me, I like, for my creative mind to really burst, I think I, you know, because I do live a very free existence. Like, I really don't give a shit about very much of what, like, is expected of a person or what a person's supposed to look like or sound like or do, or like how many hours of a day is acceptable for you, for me to take a nap if I want or whatever. I don't care about those kind of things. So like, I'm not under enough duress most of the time to reach a really like emotive state with songwriting. Mm-hmm. Like if I didn't, like if my normal, if I was just making myself write right now when I have the world at my fingertips, it would be like probably an instrumental fucking super crazy funk album that didn't take a lot of effort. You know, it would just be like funking out for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. wouldn't have a lot of lyrical content probably.
I got you. A little less thought involved. Yeah. Well, I'm down with that. I love just straight instrumental music.
Yeah.
For sure.
That would be my jazz album. And I would just call it that regardless of what anybody else thought it should be classified as.
Oh, yeah. I hear that. What's coming up for you guys musically? You have shows coming up, right?
Yeah, we got things happening.
March is a big month. We have 3, 4, 5 Jive happening at Artillery Brewing Saturday, March 4th. That's at Onyx and Honey, Will Snooze, Fragments of Greatness, Willie and the G's, and DJ Mojo Rising.
Yes, man.
Where is that going to be at?
Artillery Brewing. And that's in Westchester, PA. And just while we have the floor here for Artillery, Artillery is a brewery. It's on Gay Street, but it's like at the end of Gay Street. So at the end, like where Saloon is, if you keep going straight, there's like a parking lot right there. You park right there. It's generally always free, like at night. You might have to pay during the day, but they are not only a banging craft brewery, but they personally want and support local original music. He also covers Welcome. I'm not saying they only will accept original, but I'm just saying like it is a hidden gem
music
that fosters original music, that wants it, that prioritizes it, and I just wanted to make sure that they got a shout out, because not everybody's down for the cause, especially when you hear about how Westchester like used to be. which used to be like everybody was down for that cause, for just quality different kinds of music. But yeah, so shout out to Justin at Artillery, because
yeah, they've been a great support.
Yeah, and you can go catch a show there pretty much anytime.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much
music pretty regularly.
They have a lot of music
at Artillery.
Full bands, acoustic, I mean, check it out. I think they have their stuff on their website and stuff. But we usually do, like, really cool, like, pop-up collabs, like, sometimes. Like, when it's nicer out, when we do events there, like, we'll have, like, a Halloween in June event there, and there'll be, like, food truck, and we have a really cool crew of people.
Like a haunted house, only warmer.
Yeah, exactly. So we got lots of cool stuff, and they let us do takeovers like that, so definitely stay tuned for that. And then right after that, on a Tuesday, Tuesday, March 7th, we're having our second annual songwriting workshop called Finding Your Groove. And it's pretty much just a big songwriting circle where we all share tips and wisdom and different tools, or we might do like different exercises or holistic approaches, whether that's meditation or just setting intentions and just kind of getting together in community. It's a free workshop. It's hosted at a line space. And yeah, the goal, you might not write a song, maybe you will, hopefully you will, I think you will, but the goal for that workshop that we do is to get inspired. And there was people there who don't even play music who came just who wanted to see what it was about. And
it was pretty cool, the first one. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
It was overflowing with creativity and everybody was just vibing off of each other. So we have something cool planned for that too. So definitely, if you're just looking to network, everything that we do is always going to be like a networking event too. We want you to meet the people who are out here trying to do the same thing.
No, I gotta see if you guys try and bring the community, foster a community, and you know, be kind to that for sure. I definitely noticed that.
It's better for everyone. Get a flow going. It's better for the people. They don't get too fatigued. There's a lot of choices. You know, you got to keep the things flowing, man. Keep everybody energized.
Mm-hmm.
Share that.
There's a lot of talent out there, no doubt.
Also, we have March 17th at the Moose with New Kings for our St. Patty's celebration.
Nice.
It's good. We love that gig. That's always been a big one for New Kings.
Yeah, I've heard about that venue. That's awesome.
So the Moose is another spot where like we can like, you know, they're very cool. They do not ever care music style or anything. They'll give everybody a chance in there, and very supportive of the music and kind of let us hold the reins when we do events there. And that's where we do the look around as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So who, any artists you guys are listening to these days have been piquing your interest?
I mean, we went and saw Charlie Crockett, and that was an amazing show. I've definitely been digging his stuff. Finding that I actually liked some, like, I think like 3 albums ago, some of that stuff even better than the newest album. But he's a really nice country-tinged artist, but he's got that bluesy New Orleans vibe too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's incredible. Yeah. Also, I discovered Fontaine's DC last year. That was a cool find. Fontaine's DC.
Some Dubliners.
Yeah, they're super Dublin. I guess the genre, which I didn't know before this, was called shoegaze, but I feel like they're more punky
poet punk.
They're sick. Okay. I've been digging on them.
How about locally? Any bands you want to give shout outs to?
Oh, so many.
I mean, yeah, we've been vibing with Two Knob Bobs. They're good friends of ours. 314.
Holler.
Muskrat Flats, good friends of ours too.
Nikki Bihanas. Yeah. Everybody who comes to the Westchester.
Now she's like, yeah, I don't want to forget anybody because there's way too many.
Dude, I mean, if you know, you know. We have a pretty extensive crew. We just love everybody who's doing the thing right now. And yeah, I don't even know.
So the Look Around Music Festival will have some of these bands?
Yeah, that's a good time to see like who we're really vibing with. We're not releasing any official lineup yet, but we have some things already picked out. It's going to be a nice stacked year. I mean, you can look back at last year too. That's people that we really love and support. Like some of them just aren't going to be on this year because we've got to switch it up.
Right.
But, you know, like...
It's in Westchester?
Yes.
Yeah, at the Moose.
On August 26th.
August, Saturday, August 26th. So
outside.
So the Moose has, there's the Elks on top, the Moose on the bottom, and it's right behind the beer mill. I feel like everybody always knows where the beer
mill is. It's kind of like, it's kind of like a mullet. Business up front, party in the back.
Sure.
Elks is the business. The Moose is the party.
So the inside, the Moose will be open simultaneously during the day for like bar service or maybe workshops. We don't know yet. But outside is like 4.5 acres of land. and there's tons of space. We had anticipated like 400 people last year, and I was like 400, and we cleared like 1,000 easily.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're hoping to have like 2,000 out this year, or you know, 1,500 to 2,000. We'll see what's going on, but yeah, we're definitely, and once again, that's all crew love. Like, you know, it was our idea and our musing, but everybody has made that cut. Josh Trout, Nikki Bihanas, the board, Edwin, all them. Yeah. Everybody's making it happen, seriously. It's crazy.
You can look at all the beautiful photos from last year that Kevin Matsanka, our homie.
Kevin Matsanka,
A1 team
glory
member.
To Kevin Zenka, yeah. Dude. I love you. I know.
If you've not met him, yeah, you said he photoed you too.
He's yeah, Keith Barn. And,
yeah, he's
yeah.
a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kevin Zenka is just.
He really gets the blood flowing and like makes you remember why you're out here making music and like why you should be like loving it wholeheartedly.
Thanks.
When you see his face at a good show and like the happiness. And then he just seems to capture the vibe perfectly.
His pictures time. Pop. Yeah, yeah. They kind of remind me. Did you ever get any shots by John Clark? He passed
oh,
away.
Oh, yeah, he passed away. Probably, I think there were some from when I was playing with Ja People.
He had some
with
Dean shots.
Where he had taken some shots. Yeah.
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 But that's
rest
good.
In peace.
Yeah, for real. So you guys going to play a couple tunes?
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Yeah. Grab our geeters. It's going to be featured on our next Onyx and Honey album, a thing called Build a Bridge, which is one of the ones that I started writing while I was locked up and brought it to the table with the band, and everybody had good contributions. This is going to be a nice one to throw on there. Let me see it. Hold on. I think I'm good. One, two, three, four. It's a feeling that I just can't do. to have a ridge. There's an ocean of sorrow between here and there. I guess I'm gonna have to build a bridge. Upstate at Cole Township, where I was lucky enough to be able to have this. So this actual guitar was my my jail piece. My mother Mare passed away while I was in there, and I quickly put the tribute on the guitar. Mm-hmm. And her spirit definitely goes with me wherever I go with this thing. So she's here right now. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, they're like a $500 model that Martin makes. You're not allowed to spend more than that in prison. There's a cap on what you're allowed to buy your guitar for. My great friend Chris Mush T, he sent me the money to purchase the guitar while I was locked up. And so I got that and squared away. Like, for me, that investment on an acoustic guitar also was something I never would have even spent $200 on an acoustic guitar before I went away. It was not a part of my view to end up playing acoustic guitar. Now I love it equally.
Okay.
As a different form of expression, but it also is, I guess when you're doing the singer-songwriter thing, it becomes more, I don't know, the acoustic becomes more part of your soul.
I remember, I think we were doing a jam at Victory Brewing.
Yeah, that was like, I did that.
And you were really saying to me, you were like, I kind of do the same thing or something like.
I play it the exact same way. I think like now I play electric guitar a little differently from the influence of playing this for 4 years straight. Versus like doing anything, like I play this pretty much how I play electric, but some of what I've learned playing acoustic has now gone over. Because I like, on an acoustic, you have to play in a slightly different way to make your solo stand out against yourself as a rhythm or whatever. It's a different form of soloing, or if you're trying to go off of the just strumming. So you have to play in a more percussive way or something.
Yeah, you're not relying on it. Well, you don't use a lot of effects when you're playing electric either, some reverb.
Yeah, I usually just try to, for me, like the ideal is straight into a Fender amp with a little reverb, which I'll variably crank throughout. Some stuff I want that real heavy surf reverb. Uh-huh. That's about as goofy as I ever get. Sometimes if I'm feeling real wacky, I'll throw the tremolo on a little bit. But
Magic Slim, yeah, right? Yeah. Get that kind of sound. Yeah.
I love a good wah. It's just that I've had so many gigs where like my wah-wah pedal just didn't work when I went to use it, and I ended up kicking it to fuck, you know, like,
right.
It becomes like a more of a hassle to plug in the stuff than to just plug in and go.
Yeah. Cool, what you got? Another one?
Which one? Do they got anything in mind?
Should we play you get it?
Yeah, let's do that. We were talking about the Getty. We might as well do that. That'd be good. Thank you. Something calling me. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Very nice. Very nice. You guys sound great together. That's cool.
Yeah, that the whole second part of that song, that long chord progression, like, dude, that especially, that was like some autopilot. Most of the song was done. And like from the description she had given me of like the atmosphere she wanted in the song, that part came out on keyboard. I played that all.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even really play keyboard. I played that, made that progression up like improvisationally. Oh. And then had to learn it on guitar. And I was like, wow, that's a really, it's cool. I didn't know, it wasn't.
It sounded like you were delving into jam, you know, a little bit of the jam bands, which is different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was weirdly just came out. It was, I don't know if just the way the hands lay. I don't like, it's not a progression I would have came out of from my background.
Right.
It just came from the spirit of the song.
So you saw the souls merge, and that's what happens.
Yep.
Well, on that note, because we're pretty much out of time, thank you guys
thank you so much for having us.
Next week, we got Patty McCann of Muskrat Flats.
Oh, very cool.
I know he'll be talking about the Muskrat Flats show coming up at Ardmore Music Hall, which I believe is the 27th. It's a big show for them, because I know it's opening for Tom Hamilton's new side project, More. Which I've heard before, and I dig it. That's heavy. That's some cool. That'll be a great show. So we'll see you next week, every Monday, 7 p.m. for the live stream, Mainline Beyond with Mark Singer. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next time. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Right on.
Thanks again for tuning in to episode 6 of the Mainline and Beyond with Mark Singer. Brought to you by ILoveMarkSinger.com, your local neighborhood musical realtor. That's Mark with a C. Next week's guest is none other than Patty McCann of the jam band Muskrat Flats, who has a big upcoming show at the Ardmore Music Hall opening for Tom Hamilton's More. Looking forward to that one. You all have a great week, and thanks again for tuning in.